Yes, it is. It's Film Reviews and Movie News. And joining me for it, legend has it, he once won an Oscar nomination the last time he got a paper cut. It's Mark Zibby.
Hello. Oscars. Hello. Oscars.
Oh, yes.
Oscars.
Got to keep him away from those sharp-edged sheets.
Yes, yes. Oscars this weekend, obviously. Are you excited? You're excited. You staying up?
Oh, I might do. Actually, I've never actually done that. I never stayed up for it. That always looked like it's a bit like the Brit Awards, where everyone gets slightly more drunk towards the end. And you never quite know what's going to happen in those speeches.
I don't think it's quite like that, yeah. I've got to be honest. I just feel like it's a bit more civil than, you know, something like the Brit Awards or something else. But yes. Yeah.
When is it this weekend?
So it's Sunday night, which is basically, you know, early hours of Monday morning for us. All whatever it is. I mean, I don't know how long it is now. That's the thing, because, you know, when I used to stay up and watch it, it was like 3 and a bit hours. Now they've done away with some of the awards, showing them live. Instead, they've done them previously, which obviously there's a whole backlash against that, and I'm completely in agreement. They should be showing these awards. So I don't know how long it's on for at all this year. No idea at all.
About 5 minutes?
Probably about 5 minutes, yeah. And the rest of it will watch it on social media. I don't know. Yes.
Isn't it last year they didn't have a host? Was that the Oscars or was that the...
It's the same this year, as in they don't really have an official host. They've got three people who are going to do the main hosting of it. But then they will have, obviously, as usual, individual presenters as well. So they're not classing them as hosts anymore.
They're just extras.
They're just people who come on and do more than one presenting bit. I don't know.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's all I'm saying, really.
Could have asked
We're
available.
Could
have asked you.
Yeah, well, we could have done it together. Could have done double act.
I don't fancy dressing up in a penguin suit. It's not my look. I've got to be on. No, I don't.
You could go casual. I'll go smart. We'll just a
hoodie and some jeans and a scruffy trainers.
Yeah. That's not far. I might do the same.
There we go.
Get one of those T-shirts with a tux printed on it.
Oh, yeah, I could do that.
That'd work.
Yes.
Awesome. What have you got for us this week, Mark?
Well, I mean, talking of Oscars, let's start with a film that has been nominated in the Best Foreign Language category. Finally getting this film. It's taken a long time to get here. I think it feels like about a year since I saw this, and then I saw it again late last year as well. So, The Worst Person in the World. It's not about you, Stuart. It's fine.
It's a film or the person you sat next to at the cinema.
No, it's fine. So that's the title of the film. It chronicles the 4 years in the life of Julie, a young woman who navigates the troubled waters of her love life and the struggles of a career path, leading her to take a realistic look at who she really is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the director of this film, Joaquin Trier, suggests this is a rom-com for people who hate rom-coms.
A lot of people out there like that.
Well, I'm kind of thinking, okay, that sounds interesting. And do you know what? I'm kind of inclined to agree with him as well. I mean, that's not to say that this isn't a romantic movie, because it is, okay? It's just not done in the usual way that I think a lot of audiences have come to know and love. It's very much an opposites movie. And that all starts with the central character of Julie. I mean, she's a very carefree 20-something, very little brings her down. She is more than happy to just gatecrash parties and then pretend she knows who the birthday boy or girl is as well. She's a very confident person. But then maybe she's a bit too confident. I think that's the great thing about the film, is that you are never sure if you should fully like Julie or not. You know, there's some things that she did that I thought, that's brilliant. That's fantastic. There are others which I saw her do and I thought, that's disgraceful. You know, so
too far, Julie.
Yeah. So I think that's the beauty, not just of the character, but also the entire film, because you're just not quite sure about anything or anyone, especially Julie, who is strangely imperfect and perfect at the same time. So, I'll give you a case in point. Okay, there's a scene in the film where Julie's running through the streets with quite gleeful abandonment, shall we say, because she's fallen in love. Now, in that moment, the film very much feels like it's a standard rom-com, okay? And you, yeah. I sat there thinking, okay, well, you know, it's hitting the standard beats now. And here's Trier saying, no, it's not a standard rom-com. Then what it does, out of nowhere, it throws in this element of fantasy. I'm not going to spoil what happens. However, I will say that at first, I really wasn't taken with the change-up. Then I liked it. And then a minute later, I was totally in love with it because it was questioning. You know, I was kind of questioning why somebody has never done something like this before in a movie, something as simple as what they do in the movie, because slipping a rom-com into a sort of fantasy-type movie, but not too much, just enough. You know, I'd never seen it done before, and I was thinking, okay, this is interesting. And then I was like, actually, do you know what? It worked brilliantly. I was really impressed with what they did with it. I do have to mention Renate Rinisvi as Julie. I think that's how you pronounce her name. Apologies if it's not. Because it's such a brilliant performance. It's really difficult to make a character likable and unlikable in equal measure.
Yeah, that can't be easy.
No, absolutely not. And I think she pulls it off perfectly. I mean, it's a brilliant performance and an equally brilliant movie. I do note that the director has said that the inspiration for him to make this movie was Annie Hall, the Woody Allen film starring Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep? Oh, I can't remember now. My mind's gone all a blank now because I'm thinking about the worst person in the world. He was saying that that Annie Hall was a big inspiration. I can see that. I can really see that. It's kind of like Annie Hall mixed with some European storytelling, some European adult storytelling. And then, as I said, a strange yet rather well-worked bit of fantasy. It's such a strange movie, but at the same time, a really good movie. It is, I think, the best foreign language film I've seen over the past year as well. And I've seen some really good stuff. I mean, we've reviewed
some good things.
Yeah, but I think this is the best one just because it's very uplifting and at the same time, slightly different as well.
Nice to see him try something different and mix up a genre like this.
Well, that's the thing.
The rom-coms don't really get much different.
Well, how often do we turn around and we go, oh, it's all just full of cliches and, you know, it's all this. Yeah. And the problem is, let's face it, rom-coms are the very definition of cliches. And you just think nobody's ever getting away with it. You know, nobody's ever veering away from that well-trodden path. The Worst Person in the World actually does that in such a unique way. Then I was like, okay, this feels completely out of the ordinary. And yet at the same time, it feels like it is still treading that same path, which is what I really liked about it.
Marvellous. So The Worst Person in the World, the best international film in the world.
That was
bizarrely.
There was a very tentative link there as well. Diane Keaton was in Annie Hall. Sorry, everybody.
I knew it.
Sorry, it just came back to me. Not Meryl Streep, obviously. Diane
worst
Keaton. There we go.
Film critic in the world.
I know. My mind just went blank.
That's what I do to you. A good film it just wipes you out.
It's true. It does. Yeah, it does. It takes you off. Yes.
So is this in cinemas?
So this is in cinemas, yeah, absolutely. And it's well worth seeing.
Best cinemas in the world.
Yeah, only the best cinemas in the world, yeah. So in cinemas at the moment.
So it's got your nod for the Oscar?
I mean, that's a tough category because it's up against Flea as well, which we will actually review in a few weeks' time. That's another very impressive foreign language movie. I'm hoping Worst Person in the World wins. I don't know if it will. I've got to be honest.
No, so we'll find out next week.
We'll know in a few days' time. Yes.
Oh, so what else you got for us, Mark?
So now on DVD and Blu-ray, and also streaming on Disney Plus as well, which is the most random thing ever for this movie. Nightmare Alley. Now, obviously, we had reviewed this several weeks ago when it came out. You know, Guillermo del Toro's remake of the same film from 1947. It's the story of an ambitious carnival worker with a talent for manipulating people with a few well-chosen words. He hooks up with a female psychiatrist who is even more dangerous than he is. So, as I said, it's on DVD and Blu-ray. It's on Disney Plus as well. I kind of wanted us to talk about it because, obviously, when we reviewed it, I said, listen, I think it's a great film. It didn't do well at all. I mean, I'm not going to say it was a bomb. Oh. I don't know why it didn't really do well. I think maybe the marketing wasn't great. I think maybe some people were put off because it was a dark movie, you know,
bit
like
too noir.
Yeah, maybe a bit too noir. I'm not sure. It's difficult to put your finger on why a film like this, and directed by, you know, one of the best writer directors around for the past two decades or more, Guillermo del Toro, you know, it's why I'm still unsure as to why it didn't do well. But hey, look, here's a chance. If you didn't see it in cinemas, now's the chance to see it, because it's a heck of a film. It really is. It's a slow burn movie. So for the first hour, you're kind of drawn into Stanton Carlyle's life while he's working at the carnival. It's quite a nice experience, first seeing Stanton work his way around the shows, and he starts to get the knowledge of how one show works, then how the other one works, and then how the staff work as well. So, you know, hey, from the outside, the guy looks, you know, he looks good. He seems nice as well. He's got a bit of a smooth talking around the ladies as well, shall we say. And then slowly, we start to see this mask slip. And then when Stanton and his girlfriend Molly leave the carnival to go off and do bigger and better things, or at least they try to do bigger and better things, that's when the film really changes. And it becomes a movie about male dominance, really, and how quickly male toxicity and everything that goes with that can crumble because of somebody entering their life who they're not quite sure about and they're unsure how to deal with as well. And that woman in this is psychiatrist Dr. Lilith Ritter, played by Cate Blanchett, who is more than Stanton Carlyle's equal all the way along, really. It's fascinating to see how she slowly creeps into his life and then begins to take over. And as I said, it becomes one of these movies that you sort of become transfixed with, I think, because you're unsure about all of these characters. You're unsure who is really on the level. Who is the good guy in this piece? That's a good question, actually. Who is the good guy in this piece?
Do you think maybe that was why he didn't do so well at the box office? A little bit of a grey area as to who you're supposed to be rooting for.
You could well be right there. You could well be right. Is that, you know, who do you really root for? I mean, yes, okay, we can root for Bradley Cooper, you know, Stanton Carlyle. But as I said, he's not a nice guy in the second half of the movie. That's the thing. It's a movie that sort of builds to this climax that I found was so full of intensity. Even though, as I said, I would class this as maybe a drama/thriller. But that finale really got to me. I was like, this is fantastic. This is getting the heart rate up, I've got to be honest. I think, you know, possibly, going back to obviously why this didn't do too well, I think maybe it's because most people associate Guillermo del Toro with making monster movies. Let's be honest here.
All right, yeah.
You know, but the thing is, this is a monster movie. It's the fact that the monster is actually man.
It's Bradley Cooper. He's a monster.
Exactly. I think that's the thing, is that, you know, you don't realise it until you've seen the movie, is that there are monsters in this and they are all despicable humans. That's the point of it, I think, you know. It's a movie that operates on many levels. I think Bradley Cooper is fantastic in it. I think Cate Blanchett is brilliant in it. It's so well directed. It looks amazing as well. It absolutely stands out. It really does. You know, and I'd said this to you before, Stuart, actually. You know when people go, oh, they don't make movies like they used to back in the day and whatever else? Well, they do. Nightmare Alley has been made, and it's like a movie from back in the day. You know, it's a now movie that really should be from the pre-code era, which obviously the original one kind of was. It was just outside the pre-code era. So there are still people out there making movies from the old timers as well, which is great. So I really hope people do watch this, because this is absolutely brilliant. I think it's one of Del Toro's best movies to date. I think it's better than Crimson Peak, and I really liked Crimson Peak as well. That's the thing. I think it's a movie that will find its audience over time, and that's an unfortunate thing, because it needs to find its audience now, otherwise Del Toro is probably never going to be given an option to make a film noir. And we want more film noir, because it's such a great subgenre, and we don't get it anymore. Yeah. You know, we last week we were talking about erotic thrillers, weren't we?
That's right.
And I said to you, we don't get many erotic thrillers anymore. This week we're talking about a film noir. We don't get many film noirs anymore. So it's, you know, those two genres alone.
Trying to mix it up a bit.
Exactly. Mate. Those two genres alone really pushed a lot of the other genres that we see now, you know, thrillers and dramas and action and everything. And then they sort of faded away. So it's great when films come back like this. And when they come back big, like Nightmare Alley, I think it is a triumph for the writer, the director, the actors, everybody involved, that it stands out so much. And this one, to me, stands out. It really does. As I said, I think it's one of Del Toro's best movies. It's got to be seen, really. And as I said, it's on DVD. It's on Blu-ray. It's on Disney Plus as well, most random place.
It's on Disney
Plus. It's on Disney Plus.
Stick it on after and can't tell
you. Yeah, exactly. So there's no excuse. You know, I think this is... you know, this is a movie that I think Del Toro is going to be proud of in 10 years time or something else like that. And I think anybody who watches it is going to remember how great this movie is. And when they talk about it, they're going to go, you really should watch Nightmare Alley, because it is a phenomenal piece of work.
Amazing. So Nightmare Alley out on all the Disney Plus.
Disney Plus, DVD and Blu-ray as well. I think it's out on 4K as well. I mean, it's all over the place.
Have it in multiple options on multiple screens at the same time.
Why not? Why
that
not?
It really would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
Mark, we've just done and passed a milestone here on Film Reviews and Movie News. You've done your 500th film.
Wow.
With me, anyway. You probably did more than
that.
Wow.
500?
500 films. Out of all them 500, what was your favourite? I can't even remember them, to be honest.
Oh, dear. No, listen, you can't say that, because we've gone through years. That's the thing. You know, if you just said to me, what's the best film from last year? I'd known that, because we did a whole episode about it. But best film, I don't know. It's so difficult, isn't it? It's so difficult to choose.
I'd say Eurovision Story of Fire.
No, it's definitely not that. It's definitely not that. No, you only say that because you like that movie and then you got me to do part of the song. So it's definitely not that.
Exactly.
But 500. Wow.
Blimey. That's a lot of hours of your life, Mark.
It is, but most of it was enjoyable.
Average about 2.5 hours, so you're looking at about 500, about 1,500 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Ah, don't put it like that. It sounds terrible, doesn't it? Really.
But how many weeks is that?
Don't put it into minutes and into hours as well. Makes it even worse. But it's been brilliant, and you know, 500. Wow, wow.
Well done. Virtual high five.
Yes, exactly. Yes, virtual high five. And obviously, thanks to everybody for listening who has tuned in for all 500 or more.
Oh, my God. Yeah, if you have, well played.
Yeah, thank you. That's... Thank you. You know, even my mum doesn't listen that much.
Even I don't listen that much.
There we go. And you're here.
So what's our last film up?
So what we should talk about is we should talk about a musical, Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Dear Evan.
So adapted.
I've never met Evan Hansen.
Yeah. Well, here you go. You're going to meet him now. You see, this is the thing. It's about a high school student called Evan Hansen who struggles with his social anxiety disorder. Evan begins a journey of self-discovery and acceptance after the suicide of one of his classmates. Do you know this is a musical, like an award-winning musical from the stage? Did you know that?
I had no idea.
Okay.
I've literally just see the poster that says from the screenwriters of, and I imagine it would be.
Yes. Yes.
That's an interesting topic to make a musical out of, isn't it?
Well, it kind of is, yeah.
As a challenge.
Yeah, I think, you know, here's another movie that isn't like what you expect it to be. I think a lot of people are probably going to watch this movie thinking, hey, it's like the stage show, or hey, it's like a standard musical. It's such a strange adaptation. Even when it's trying to play it straight down the line in terms of how it shows Evan dealing with his problems, there are just some productions, I think, that don't benefit from moving from stage to screen. I think this is probably the biggest of the lot, excluding Cats, of course, because that's in a whole other
thing. Whole new world.
Yeah. Honestly, this just feels like a mess. Like the opening song and dance number is done with all the vigor of trying to get out of bed on a Monday morning. There's no energy to it. And when you have no energy to the opening scene, then I think you're really in big trouble. Even with even with the most hardened of musical lovers, if you turn up and you go, oh, right, we're starting here on a sort of low level, you know. I mean, there's a couple of okay-ish numbers in the film, but on the whole, I don't think it has the musical energy that so many classic musicals do, really. Also, the character of Evan, even though he has social anxiety, and that has to be factored into the character, is a bit of an uninteresting guy.
He's the main man.
Yeah, I mean, even during his journey of self-discovery, it does become quite clear that if you aren't fully behind him as a character, you're going to have a tough time really engaging with him and the entire movie, which is what I did. And I there was times where I just zoned out when he was talking. You know, just became monotonous and dreary. And I wish there had been more of an effort when Evan was making up this world that he has to make up to the family of the person who has committed suicide. You know, he tells the family these false stories about how they were friends and they would do loads of things together. It's all false, by the way. But the way he tells the stories is a bit lackluster. And then, they kick into a song or dance. You know, there should be these big imaginative stories that pop off the screen with colour and energy. Instead of just bumble along, hey, here's another story that Evan's going to tell. Yeah. Whatever else. You know, look, I'm sure there are many out there who love this musical and the message that is at the heart of it. But as I said, some things just don't translate well to the big screen. And this is very much one of them. I mean, if truth be told, honestly, to me, this came across as Napoleon Dynamite, the musical.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Not good then.
No. And as I said, it's got this really important message at the centre of it. And I just thought it came across as just lackluster, underwhelming, a bit of a parody of what it was meant to be doing as well. You know, it's not a good film at all.
That sounded like everything we've been doing in this podcast for 500 films. Oh, shame. So better as a stage performance in, if you want to see it, I suppose.
I'll tell you this. When I went to see this, I was sat with a couple of people, a couple of film critics who had seen the stage show, loved the stage show, were banging on about it to me before the film started. And I'm like, okay, well, these people are clearly really looking forward to the movie. Afterwards, the same sort of reaction as what I had, okay? So I think that tells you how this film is not hitting the marks it should be.
Shame, but it's out on...
It's out on DVD and Blu-ray now.
If you fancy it.
Yeah, and I must say as well, it's not as though it's one of those that it's so bad it's good. It's not one of those movies either.
It's not even that bad. Just
It's just not a good musical. It's plain and simple. It's not a good musical.
So, Dear Evan Hansen, Return to Sender.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Excellent. Mark, what you got for us next week?
And next week we're going to be talking about an animated movie called The Bad Guys. It's all about some animals that want to become good, even though they're really bad.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And then DVD and Blu-ray, we're going to be talking about a horror film called Broadcast Signal Intrusion. Do you know what that means?
Oh, I'm guessing we've had it on Phoenix FM a few times.
What it means is basically when you have a broadcast going out, a standard broadcast, whether it's on TV or radio, and it gets interrupted. So kind of like, think back to Batman movies when the Joker does an interruption. So that's what so that's what it is.
Okay.
Broadcast Signal Intrusion. It's a horror movie. And then on the podcast, we're going to be talking about a part live action, part animation hybrid musical.
Wow, that sounds highbrow.
Just you wait. All I'll say is bring your tap dancing shoes. Sorry, oh, no, not your tap dancing. Bring your ballet shoes.
Oh, ballet shoes. I haven't got any of them yet.
Well, you've got a week to get them. You've got a week.
Get some more.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. I'll see you there for 501.
Film reviews and movie news with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Thanks for listening to Film Reviews and Movie News. We've been doing this little podcast for years now. Mark has watched and expertly reviewed hundreds of films, and I've made hundreds of terrible jokes. They're all available to listen to again if you subscribe to the Film Reviews and Movie News podcast. It's freely available wherever you get your podcasts from, or you can find all the latest episodes and everything else I do online at stuartpink.com.